It's a Friday, and we do get our view from the north. Yeah, last week, as our talk wound down, I kind of jokingly said, well, what'll be on tap next week? Who the hell knows? So welcome in the guy covering the Blazer beat for the Oregonian and more. On Twitter, it's Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, another week, another step closer to the apocalypse. How are all you doing up there?
We are fine. There's nothing threatening us. We are north of Highway 26 in Portland. So basically, all of Beaverton would have to be completely burned down. And then the fire would have to go up a major hill, which, of course, fires go up hills to get to us. So we're lucky that we're in a good position. Based on the current fires, we're just hoping that nothing else strikes up somewhere else, you know. But it's just wild what's going on. You know, we're watching the attention to everything that's going on down there in your neck of the woods. And, you know, I've been in contact with people down there. I know live there and make sure they're okay. And it's just sad and scary what's happening.
Yeah, it's week to week. So, speaking of, you know, for my parents' generation, it was November 22nd, 1963. You know, for us, September 11, 2001. Just a quick thought, where you were and what you were doing, and what do you remember when the news of the attacks on the World Trade Center and Pentagon hit?
19 years ago, right?
Yeah, today.
Jeez. Yeah, no, today, but I was...
Crazy.
Just thinking about how, God, almost 20 years. I was asleep, and my wife came in to wake me up and said a plane had hit one of the towers. I can't remember if she told me about the first one or the second one. I think she might have told me about the second one, because that freaked her out. That's right, that's what it was, because she came in freaked out. Because the first one, she just figured, you know, oh, man, someone, you know, flew into one of the towers, you know, a plane was crashing in the, you know, falling out of the sky and, you know, crash into a tower. But she was telling me about the second one, and she was freaking out. And so I rolled out of bed, and because that was probably six, what? The first one hit about six something our time?
Yeah, our time. It was, right.
And so I went and just turned on the TV and started watching it, and I was just like, holy cow. Clearly, there was, you know, that seemed like a coordinated thing. Right.
Right.
No way. You know, what are the odds of one plane, you know, crashing and falling to the World Trade Center, one in a billion. Well, two in 17 trillion or whatever. So clearly it was like there was an attack going on. And so I'm watching it live when the tower started going down. I'll never forget, I'm watching it. All of a sudden, like, it just started to crumble and go down. And it was just like that's when it just went up just another level. Because at the time, if you remember, like, we didn't know how many people were really in there.
Nope.
Right, clearly there was evacuation going on, things like that, but there was so many floors above. And I remember the reports later that had the planes hit at like 10 a.m., it could have been tens of thousands of people trapped in the upper floors. So, you know, not to say anything was good about what happened, but it was fortunate that it did happen as, you know, early as it did. So anyway, that's just what I remember. I just remember watching it, you know, all day long and, you know, for the weeks after that, and it was just... It was definitely one of the more, you know, unforgettable, horrific moments in the history of this country, really.
Yeah, when that second tower went down, I remember talking with a friend of mine, because we used to go to the Garden and when I was 10, 11 years old, and then we drive downtown, and we were watching them build it. So just, you know, for my generation, it was like we saw them alter the New York skyline. And then it was gone, and it was like just infuriating. All right, yeah. Let's try and go a little more upbeat here. You know, looking at the NBA, while Houston has the firepower, you know, Denver with Jokic and Murray are fun to watch. Just the fan in you with the sense of history. I mean, the reigning Finals MVP Kawhi, LeBron, LA versus LA. I mean, it's probably going to happen, but that's really got to be what you're rooting to see, right?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me, man? I think that's what most people outside, I mean, everyone has their favorite team, but outside of your favorite team getting there, I mean, all the drama would be wrapped up in that. No doubt. And plus, Kawhi was allegedly talking to the Lakers, which I'm so glad he didn't do that, because had he gone to the Lakers, I mean, I wouldn't even be watching. I'll be honest with you.
There'd be like, no reason.
They would not even come close to losing a series, if a game. You know, so I'm so glad he didn't do that, because that just I made everything that's been going on so much more entertaining, because you know there's a lot of teams that actually have a legit shot, although I think clearly the two best teams in the West are these two. But no, the Battle of L.A., you know, we all know the history of the Clippers, and we all know the history of the Lakers. If the Clippers were to win that series, that would just be a monumental. That would be the greatest moment in the history of that franchise. Like, not even close. That might even be bigger than if they win the championship. If I'm the Clippers, I create a poster and banner for winning the championship, and I create one for beating the Lakers in the West Finals. I bet that one sells more copies than, you know, the posters of depicting them winning the title. But no, that's definitely, you know, what I'm waiting for. I've been waiting this entire season. I'm so glad that the season rebooted so I can watch that series. It looks like it's going to happen, like you said. And over in the East, I want Boston to win. I'm disappointed in them not being able to close out that game or the one they lost with the three-pointer. And I would love to see Boston against the Lakers, who will bit go back to the, well, I guess they play with the Kobe versus the Garnett crew, but
yeah,
that always brings you back to the 80s.
Well, I hate the Celtics like poison, so I'm rooting for Toronto tonight. But let's and it's partially because of the 80s. You know, when I first moved out here, people felt like, well, you know, he's going to blend in and, you know, he's got to hate the Lakers. No, I hate the Celtics. I'm a Knicks fan, first and foremost. Talking with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. Moving to football, to the Ducks. First, it was Penei Sewell, D'Amador Lenore. Then it was Thomas Graham. I'm getting a feeling next is going to be Javon Holland. But could we just file this under least surprising news ever? Because these guys are ticketed for the NFL, and there was just no way they were going to participate in this late fall, this early spring football. No way.
Yeah, exactly. It's a tough situation. And, you know, one of the things that I'm hearing is that, you know, obviously there's a chance there could be a season, right?
Sort of.
You know, some people are holding out hope that it might be one November, maybe, right, or something like that. At the very least, maybe there's going to be one in January or the spring, and that's all nice. But, you know, once you get into January and the spring, if you're planning on going pro, there's really no reason whatsoever for you to be playing, because you should be preparing for the draft, et cetera, et cetera. A late start to a season could have some appeal, but there's uncertainty. Like, if the Pac-12 had come out and said, we're playing in November no matter what, I think a lot of these guys play, because you know, one, you know, someone like a Holland, he could use a third year. It wouldn't hurt him. You know, Graham and Lenore wouldn't hurt them to maybe improve their stock a bit. And plus, it's a season that could end in, you know, a reasonable amount of time to where they can still prepare for the draft. But with such uncertainty, and you don't know what's happening, you know, at some point you just got to pull the cord, right? And you just have to alter your direction and your plan in life. And I think that's just what's happening. I think, you know, guys who know they're not going to come back for, you know, if they had, well, see, if they're seniors like Graham, Lenore, they could come back next year. They could play actually a spring season and still play next fall, or just come back next fall, whatever happens. But they're not going to do that anyway. So why even mess around with a late season? Just move on with your life. So, you know, the uncertainty is really what I think propelled this to go faster than maybe it would have. I think if there was more of an idea or a sense that something could happen in terms of the season, I think those guys would have held off. The good news is there's going to be some guys who are draftable who are going to come back. I've heard some names already. I can't say anything about them yet, but there's you know, it's not going to be everybody bailing, let's put it that way. Every kid has a chance to get drafted is not going to leave, so there will be some names that will be announcing that they will be staying, and that will be good news for the 2021 Ducks, or whatever, you know, type of season they have later on this year or next year.
Yeah, the 2020 and a half Ducks. few final thoughts for Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. So I saw you were the debut guest of the Seahawk Maven podcast and Hannah Hoover. And you were talking about Jadeveon Clowney. And I thought you made some good points. How important is it to understand this was not really a cut and dry situation? With this guy, you need to incorporate a lot of factors when you evaluate the decision to let him walk.
Yeah, and they made an offer. Like, it's not like they didn't make an offer, right? And, you know, could they offer more? Could they have done something different? Maybe, but, you know, I think sometimes fans get caught up in the name and their imagination of what someone can bring, and to them the money doesn't matter, right? Well, who cares about the money? It's not my problem. Well, when you're running a roster and you're running a team, there's cap implications. There's all sorts of things you have to look at. And no one knows better than the coaching staff what Clowney did or didn't bring to the table last year. And, you know, the obvious thing is he brought a presence. You know, he had to be accounted for by the offense. He definitely has a lot of pressures and quarterback hurries, et cetera, et cetera. But he only had 3 sacks, right? And so if you're a team and you're trying to improve your pass rush, you have to ask yourself, do I split up that $15, $20 million, whatever he wanted initially, and spread it around to make my team better, you know, in a bunch of different places, or do I put it all on this one guy when he just gave me 3 sacks and a contract year? It just doesn't make, and we promised him we wouldn't franchise him. So I think that it just came down to the fact that, you know, it's a situation where Clowney believes he's worth X, the team believes he's worth Y, neither wanted to budge, and so they went in a different direction. And I think the fact that they improved the back end of the defense with Adams is huge, because I do think, you know, there's always that question, which is more important, the pressure or the coverage? And I'm a believer that it's the pressure, because you have to make the quarterback uncomfortable. But one of the problems last year with the pass rush was that the coverage was pretty weak. So if your pass rush is actually creating a lot of pressure, but guys are open, that helps the quarterback. And I think by getting a guy like Adams to help shore up the back end, and then adding the 2 cats they did, Myla and Irvin, who combined for 16 sacks last year,
yep.
I think their defense is going to be better, period, than it was last year with Clowney. Now, you add Clowney to that, and if he's back to his old form, okay, now you're looking pretty robust. But to ask a team to invest more than they're willing to invest in that, you know, that happening is a lot to ask. I think it's easy for fans to say, but not so much for a team.
And just for a double threat, Adams actually, as a DB, rushes the quarterback pretty well.
Yeah, that's true. He's a big physical cat who's been blessed with him, yeah.
Last couple weeks, we've hit on Russell Wilson. We talked about Clowney. We know the constants of this team. But another thing you hit on is, guys who might have not been on the roster who might contribute. And you talked about the receiving core. Philip Dorsett, they went after last year. He went back to the Patriots. So what do you like about adding him to the mix of targets for Wilson?
Yeah, I give all the credit to me for them signing him, because in my players they should target column I did, I had him as the receiver that I would target. So anyway.
Well done.
thank you. And I emailed that to Pete Carroll, so he took my advice. No, I'm just kidding. But there's been a lot of, you know, grumblings out of Seattle that they want to see the Seahawks open things up and let Russell Wilson pass more often. He did pass more often last year than he did the previous year. Fans want to see more. I do think we're going to see more. I think one of the reasons is, the addition of Olsen to go along with Disley, who's going to be back, and the addition of Philip Dorsett gives them a more robust receiving core outside of, you know, Lockett and Metcalf, Metcalf's going to make another big jump. And the thing I love about Dorsett is he is fast as grease lightning, as Mr. Pryor once said. And he's going to be a guy they can use, to stretch the field for Lockett and or Metcalf, or to run underneath the field being stretched by those two. New England did not use him a ton. They was kind of hoping New England that he was going to have more of an impact. It didn't quite work out. But I think the speed he brings to the vertical game, and Russell Wilson being one of the best vertical deep passers in the league, I think, you know, I don't think this guy's going to have 1,000 yards. I wouldn't take him in my fantasy team. I don't think he's going to get targeted a ton, but I think he's going to be targeted enough that he's going to be an additional weapon to this crew that's going to make it really, really difficult to cover. I mean, you know, three receiver set with him, Metcalf, Lockett, and then Disley and or Wilson, or excuse me, Olsen, is going to be really difficult to deal with. Whereas last year, they didn't really have a legitimate number three receiver. Now they do. I think Dorsett's going to have a nice season for them.
And plus, he played at the U, so we love him for that. And lastly, you can make a case there's not really a weak team in the NFC West. They got a tough non-division schedule. Pats, Cowboys, Vikings, they go to Philly and Buffalo. So what do you make of them? Are they legit to contend in the division, the NFC, or for the whole thing?
You know, I think they have an outside shot to contend for the whole thing. I think they definitely have a legit shot to win the division. San Francisco's obviously really good. I think Jimmy Garoppolo's going to make a jump. Like, I still can't believe all the garbage he took last year. Like, his first full year starting.
Gets to the Super Bowl.
Around 4,027 touchdowns. Like, I defy you to find very many quarterbacks in history that had a better all-around season in their first full year as a starter than he did. And I think he's going to get better. That's what quarterbacks do when they play. They get better. And then I think the Rams are going to bounce back from an off year last year. They went to the Super Bowl just 2 years ago. Goff is going to get better. So I think that division is going to be a doozy. And then we'll see what happens with Arizona. A lot of people, I think, are jumping the gun with Arizona a little bit. I think they saw some flashes in Kyler Murray. They got DeAndre Hopkins. Oh, yeah, they're going to make that. I'm not sure they're there yet. But those three I mentioned are going to be in a serious battle for that division.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch. Folks, he's Aaron Fentress on Twitter, at Aaron J. Fentress, now doing it for the Oregonian. Wishing you and yours wishing you and yours continued safety and sanity. Enjoy the weekend. And like I said, I'm almost afraid to wonder what the hell we're going to talk about next week. But thanks for the time. Thanks for the time, Mr. Fentress. Have a good
one. No problem, man.
All right, take it easy.